Alan Kring Productions, in association with the Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, review for the final exam, part one. And that, of course, implies that there will be a part two on Wednesday. On Friday, you have a quiz, which will finish up the quizzes for the semester. And then we can go into next week, ready for the final exam. Brief mention. I had, as I had promised, there was a PowerPoint presentation that I created on agency. And I, for some reason, the link was there in ReggieNet, but it took you to nothing. And so I had to re-upload it, and now it's a direct PowerPoint link. It's a direct file. You just download the file instead of going to one of my education websites to get it. So that's available for you. And it covers the essentials of what I talked about last week on Friday in terms of agency. And also, it covers what I had talked about with contracts as well, and with several other topics of that lecture. Now, just a brief look at the numbers, just for you numbers hounds out there. We have had the markets just hammered a couple of days here. Definitely the bears are having a fun time. Interestingly enough, just in the last hour or so, the bulls have finally grabbed a hold, and it's a lot of it is just bargain hunting. If stocks fall enough, you can go in and grab some decent deals on things right now. I was looking at a couple of my toys that sometimes I go after. Look at U.S. Steel, which was hammered. AT&T was beaten down, and out of curiosity, just real quick here, MRO has done well by me. Ooh, ow. Okay, never mind MRO. We'll just go on back here and look at this. As you can see, the Dow is taking a whack. It's not as bad. As you can see, the bulls are trying to fight back, but the bears still have a bad attitude. And then the S&P 500 is down more than the Dow. But look at the NASDAQ. It is fighting to get back into positive territory. Now, that's unusual for the NASDAQ to be fighting for positive territory when the all the big companies are heading or are staying in negative territory. So I'm not sure what the implication of that would be, but if you used to look at crude is really sliding. There is a lot of oil out there now. And all the talk about stopping Russia from selling oil, that was baloney. The expectation now is that there's going to be a lot of oil coming out of Russia and filling, and of course there will be oil coming out of the other traditional oil exporting countries. And so we're going to have a decent time with gas prices and diesel prices, jet fuel prices, and all that here for at least a while. And that's, as I said, that's just the whole thing. You can be morally outraged by such inconveniences as genocide, but when it comes to greed, we need our oil. Yes, we do. So oil is going to flow. We're going to buy it, and so is the rest of the world, and then speak of moral outrage over lattes. Moving over here. Gold and silver are taking their beatings. So money is definitely gone out of equities, and it's not going to metals. But here we are. Look at the 10-year bond. It's down. The yield is down 12 basis points. That means that the price is up. So money is flowing into bonds right now, the safe harbor of bonds. And that's something for the final exam. Bonds are generally safer than stocks. Simply because, the big thing is that bondholders have to be paid. Shareholders don't have to get a dime. But if you screw over the bondholders, they can shut your company down, liquidate it, and take everything home with them. So, of course, bonds are going to be a safe harbor in uncertain times. Just out of, going back here to S&P, I'm just curious here. See how much volume there is today versus, well, we're about halfway through the day. Yeah, it's still lightweight volume. It's a little stronger than it has been recently at 1.5 billion shares against the typical for an entire day of 4 billion. So it's still really lightweight, although it does seem to have had a surge upward a little bit there. But going over here, London taking a whack, and so is Tokyo taking a whack. So there's generally a sour attitude. I have seen a couple of articles in the last few days, and I should save these so you can see. Some of the big analysts are popular in news media are saying, oh, there's not going to be a recession. You don't need to worry about that. The yield curve, you know, actually, yeah, the markets are believing the yield curve. Here we go. Down here. It was interesting because that 5-7-year leg tried to invert there on the 21st. It flattened to 296. But it has gotten itself back upward on this 5-7-year leg. But that 7-10-year leg is just staying inverted. And there is no doubt there's going to be a recession. And how bad it is, you know, who knows. But right now, I would take very cautiously any optimism that there's not going to be a recession just because the yield curve is saying it. That's pretty good evidence. And also we have other indicators, too, that we're going to slide into a recession. The Federal Reserve, as you can see, look at all these interest rates across the yield, across the maturities. Interest rates are going upward, and that interest rate's going up. The present value of future expected cash flows goes down. Value of corporations goes down. The number of projects that are going to be accepted goes down because the present value of the net present values are going down. Yeah, those are all the indicators of economic slowdown and quite likely a recession in the early part of next year. The thing that'll stop it from getting too serious really quickly will be the Christmas buying season. And that's always going to be something that helps companies. And going into the new year, that'll help revenue somewhat. But anyway, there's that. Okay. I'm going to talk about what I think you should know for the final exam. Now, I mean, it's just my opinion, but since I'm writing it, that's a pretty good opinion. you think? Okay. Now, on Wednesday, you ask me. It isn't a show where you just sit back and listen to other people. It is you asking me, is this going to be on the exam? If it's not, I'll say no. Don't worry about that. If it is, I'll say, yeah, it's going. Yeah, some way it's going to be on there. If you say, can you show us a problem of this kind? And I sure will. That'll be Wednesday. I will fully prep you. Then on Friday, that final quiz is going to be your last exposure to the brutality, and that's what I'm going to do on Friday. It's going to be a quiz day. It's not a home quiz. You come here and you do it, and then next week on Wednesday, we meet again at 7:50 in the morning to take the final exam. Yay, and all that.
What day and time again?
It's Wednesday, 7:50 a.m. Yeah, put it in your calendars with an alarm for like 7:30 or 7:40 so you can get over here in time. At least brush your teeth before you show up. But as usual, it's strongly, that's why I'm doing this quiz on a Friday. It means don't wait until the last minute to prep for the exam. Take it a little slower. Just get the material over and over again. Just go through it. And just get it into your bones so that when you come in here, look, here's how it works. It's 50 questions. Some multiple choice, some true and false, and then some are workout questions. The There are some that are copy and paste from the midterm. Just I copied and pasted it. I'm lazy sometimes. And others where I copied and pasted and I just changed the numbers. Or I just changed the wording a little bit. So the midterm should not be a pain in the butt. You can open up the midterm. The answers are there with the midterm. Prep yourself. That should give you a good running start. And as I've told you before, I create three levels of questions. There are the easies. That should get you, and the lower level one easy questions. And along with some of the lower level intermediate, level two, you should be able to pass the exam. And then there are some level two that are a little bit busier. They require that you think through a couple of steps. And then there are the level three that are most likely going to be the number questions. Stay frosty. Get the easies done. Don't work the exam from beginning to end. Just go through, get the ones that are obvious and easy for you, then go back and start mopping up the mess. It's the best way to solve. And if you haven't been told this before, second-guessing yourself is a really bad idea. We've done study after study, and there is a much higher probability that your first answer is right than your second answer, than you're second-guessing yourself. You are allowed two note cards, 4x6s, both sides. You're also allowed that formula sheet for the ratios. Don't write on that except for maybe a little explanation of what the formula is. That's not an extra note card. You are also, of course, obviously, you'll need a calculator. And if you feel like you want to pull up Excel, if that's the way you feel more comfortable doing a numeric, some of the, like the net present value problems, if you feel more comfortable doing it with Excel, by all means, go ahead. My TA will be wandering around to make sure you're not prowling other places hoping to find answers. I did discover that there is a resource online you can pay, and you can ask them questions in real time, and these, they'll give you the answers to questions in business subjects and in math subjects, too. Don't even try that, for God's sake. It's bad enough all these people who are using GradeBuddy who are going to find out that it's been busted, and now they're collecting the IPs of everyone who's been getting exams off there. Don't go that route. There's plenty of help. Write those note cards out. That's one of your... Honestly, you're not going to use your note cards much at all on the exam. It's actually writing them that is the great study, the help for a study guide for the exam. Let me go through this, what I think you should know. And, well, I suppose I could just bring up the exam for you, let you see it. No, I won't do that. Terminology. By my count, and I went through just to make sure in my podcasts, I've given you 89 terms. Some of them completely new, some of them much tighter explanations of language of words that are in that you've used before. Words like a bill, a note, and a bond, they have tight definitions. And so make sure that you know that tight definition. If it's a word that has been used by you before. Terminology includes everything like liquidity is a term. As I said, bill is a term. Financial intermediation. Terms like that. Par is a term. No definitions. What is a present value? What is the internal rate of return, definitionally? What do I mean by discount as opposed to compounding? That was on the first exam. What do I mean by a corporation? I want to make sure you understand, know the difference between a stockholder and a stakeholder. That term stakeholder has gotten a lot of play in recent years, and it is not a stockholder. A stockholder and a shareholder mean the same thing. What's an IPO as opposed to a seasoned offering? What is an IPO as opposed to a seasoned offering? An IPO is the first time a company goes public and sells stock. A seasoned offering would be the company is already public and it sells some more stock in itself. A lot of companies do seasoned offerings all the time. You just don't hear about it. What's the difference between preferred stock and common stock? If I use the word acid, you should know what I'm talking about. Acid as opposed to burn, as opposed to current. What do I mean? What's the difference between internally generated and externally generated equity? Yeah. Oh, I said as opposed to current. Yeah. What do I mean? There was this whole series of kind of interlocking terms. Capital versus money. I mean, in a way, they're kind of simple, but you've just got to get these locked into your mind, especially as you go through and become more accustomed to speaking as a business professional. Those two terms actually mean different things. Debt versus equity, obviously, it's kind of a big one there. Which one is generally cheaper? And when would that not be the case? You're writing so fast here. Okay, what do I mean by optimal capital structure? A caution to you, read my questions carefully, because sometimes it looks so obvious, and then you realize, oh, hell, I read it wrong. What do I bid and ask? I mean, those are very specific terms in our world. What's market cap? Is market cap the same as book value of equity? Hint, absolutely not. What do I mean by beta? Know about the different, what is profit important or meaningful to finance, or is there something else that is what we are looking for? Costs. There are a lot of different costs. Some of them matter a lot to us in finance, and others don't mean diddly to us. Like, for example, do we care about sunk costs? Historical costs. I do want to point out, suddenly I recall it was 5 years ago, I was doing this, and then after about 20 minutes, this accounting student raised her hand, and she said, in the order of your questions, and she started giving me the answers. No, don't! Okay, anyway. Historical cost, opportunity cost. direct versus indirect costs. Incremental cost. Remember that we look at projects in as the increment. We don't look at the whole company. We sandbox projects. So incremental costs would be what we would look at with present value, net present values, and all that kind of stuff. Now, make sure you know what I mean by a NOPAT. Now, I will tell you, I won't have you drill clear down from revenues and costs to a free cash flow, but I will ask you to calculate a change in net operating working capital. And I usually just pull that off financial statements from the internet, 2 years of current assets and current liabilities, find some company and have you calculate the change in net operating working capital. Remember, current liabilities, net operating working capital in the current year minus net operating working capital of the previous year. And net operating working capital is current assets minus current liabilities. So just make sure you can do one of those. Just pull up some financial statements and do one. I mean, it's not a hard calculation, but if you're under the gun on a test, you need to be able to do it without thinking about what the details of it. What do I mean by capital gain yield and dividend yield? Together, they create your total yield. Will you stop? I forgot to turn off the sound on my camera in my room. My cat's walking by it. That was the cat and then the cat's tail. I'm looking. I don't want to tell you everything, but I want to make sure you, companies, the sole proprietorship, the partnership, the corporation, what is the difference? What are the differences? I'll find some way to test you on that. I think I did that on a quiz, as a matter of fact. Now, as far as the Federal Reserve goes, what do I mean? What's the difference between regulate and supervise? What are the tools of monetary policy in order of how often they are used? Remember, the tools are the discount rate, the required reserve ratio, and the open market operations. What is the order in which they would be used by the Fed? How frequently? What do I mean? The difference between diversifiable and non-diversifiable. Yeah.
Is the order of the operations in the textbook?
No, that was the special lecture that's in those. I gave you a link to that that whole giant page that the Fed puts out about all this. And then that was also the lecture that day. So make sure you go back and listen to that podcast if you're unclear. Risk, systematic versus non-systematic. Remember that systematic is the same as non-diversifiable, and non-systematic is the same as diversifiable. I will not ask you about standalone risk versus project risk versus corporate risk. The textbook goes into kind of a confusing thing because it uses standalone risk in one way early in the text and then in another way later in the text. I won't do it that way. It'll just be systematic versus non-systematic. In that same regard, frontier of efficient investments. The capital market line. I'm sorry. The securities market line, for God's sake. What is that? What equation does that graph? I'll even tell you that one. Geez, that might even be on the exam. It's a capital asset pricing model. It plots beta on the horizontal axis against expected return to the stock on the vertical axis. Capital asset pricing model, CAPM.
You said the beta was on the axis.
Yeah, the beta is the horizontal axis. The beta of a stock, and then you go up to the line and you go over, and that'll be the expected return to the stock. Yeah, the independent variable is the beta of the stock. The dependent variable is the expected return to the stock. And if you look at the CAPM, the capital asset pricing model, you see the equation laid out. The expected return to the market portfolio is on the Y side, and the beta is like the X of a traditional equation. In that same regard, what do I mean by the market premium? I'm glad you pushed me a little bit there. It gave me a chance to remember something. What do I mean by the market premium over risk-free? Know the components of the risk-free rate. There are two. And know the components of the risk premium. There are three. Make sure you know that. Now, a caution that I give every time, and I've said it before in here, when you are studying for definitions, avoid, if you possibly can, looking up definitions on the internet. Especially in sites like Wikipedia and Investopedia, they will give you answers for dummies. They are technically wrong, and in a couple of cases, I will put their definition as a possible answer, just to make sure that you know that that can happen. We have to be a lot better than the internet. Because remember, most of the internet was written by cats. For cats, about cats, and in pursuit of the pleasure of cats. As a matter of fact, my cats have written quite a bit of web content. Give me just a second here. Know some relationships. The relationship between risk and return is fundamental. The relationship between the yield and the price. Put another way, the relationship between the price and the risk. How do I tell whether a stock is risky or not risky? There are two ways. One is preferred, and usually the two agree with each other, but sometimes they don't. Now, as far as to hell. Oh, ratios. It will be like it was on the midterm. Now, I'm not going to have you calculate ratios, but I will have you tell me, interpret a ratio, or tell me what happens to a ratio. That can be kind of subtle. Look at the formula, and then look at what I am saying is changing, and that'll tell you what's going on here. Like, for example, if I tell you a company is going to move toward more debt and less equity, what does that do to the return on equity? Let me say that one again. See if you can tell me. If I tell you that a company has decided that it is going to use more debt and less equity in its capital structure, all other things being equal, what will that do to the return on equity? Got a guess? Come on, cowboy. Well, that's what I just said, less equity. If it goes to more debt and less equity. In other words, it went from like 60% equity, 40% debt, to 70% debt, 30% equity. What should that do to the return on equity? You're just saying the same thing over and over again. Okay, return on equity is net income over equity. So if equity is going down, what happens to net income over equity? No, net income. Help him out. The return on equity goes, yes. If net income stays the same and equity goes down, the net income over equity goes up because the denominator is going up, down. So in other words, a company will have a higher return on equity if it moves more toward debt and toward less equity because the equity in the denominator is going down. If net income is staying the same, or if net income is going up, it doesn't matter, your ROE is going to skyrocket. So in other words, companies become riskier by doing more debt, less equity, and that actually makes the return on equity go through the roof. This was a problem that happened it's just one of those things that happens. It's a mathematical consequence. If a company decides that it does not want to keep as much cash as it has in the past, what should that do to all of the liquidity ratios? If a company decides that it was too cash heavy and it's going to put that cash to work, what would that do to all of the liquidity ratios? Go ahead, tell me. Absolutely, because cash is one of the current assets, and if one of them is going down and the cash is going to long-term assets instead of to another current asset, then all of the liquidity ratios will slide backward. Just look at the ratio and say, well, if he's saying that changes, goes this way, what does that do to the whole ratio? Just do it that way, and you'll be fine. I don't do a lot of that kind of stuff on the exam, but it's worth it for you to just know to look at your formula sheet and get it from there. Oh, mother's work is never done. I asked that. Okay, as far as debt goes, remember that we don't use the word borrower and lender as much in debt, talking about debt in professional work, academic and business. If we're talking about the lender of debt, then we're talking about the investor, the buyer, the purchaser of the debt. The seller, the issuer, the writer of the debt paper, that's the borrower. You should have that in your notes back there quite a ways. Make sure you know that. Because I'll describe a scenario and say you and someone else. One of you is a borrower, one of you is the lender. And I'll put it in technical terms. Well, you are the seller of a note. You are the buyer of a bond. You are the issuer of a bill. I'll describe a scenario, and you tell me the technical way to describe what happened. Agency. Know the agency costs. I might describe a situation where an agent is extracting a cost. Which cost is it? Know what I mean by the agent and the principal. Remember, I defined those last week, and I also went into the some examples. Who is which? I also set forth fiduciary duty. What are the characteristics of fiduciary duty? Now, you can go through that PowerPoint, which is now live, and get all that information. I use terms like vicarious liability. Make sure you know those. I talked about contracts. I'm not going to push you on contracts. Should have been done long before I got to teach you, but it wasn't. But remember the difference between constructive and actual knowledge, which one matters in our business. Okay, let me take you through. Now, as far as math problems go, I will have you find, I'm going to give you a scenario with a bond. Okay? The coupon and the year of maturity and all that. And then I'm going to say, I'll give you the yield, you find the price. I'll give you the price, you find the yield. Just like I did on the exam, on the quiz and all that. Exactly the same kind of problem. I'll give you the yield. You find me the price. It's just the TVM solver. And then I'll give you the price and you find the yield. And then I'll ask you for the effective rate. I'll give you a consumer loan. And I'll ask you to find me the payments. And find me the balance after a certain number of years. I will ask you to find me a future value of an annuity. You put a certain amount of money into the bank every month or every week, just like I did before. I will ask you to find me the net present value and internal rate of return of a project. It's just like, just key it in. Don't make that one hard. The one that will be a little more of a challenge, I'm going to give you, I'm going to have you find me the value right now of a stock. And it will be one of those where you have dividends for a few years and then you hit the horizon. Just stay frosty. You find the horizon value and then you just key it into your calculator with the dividends and then the horizon value. That's all you do. Try to stay frosty on it. You will have 2 hours for this exam. And as I had said before, do make sure that you do the easies first. Save the pain for after you've gotten the easies out of the way. For one thing, you'll get more points that way, and it will also build your confidence going into the heavies on it. Now, on Wednesday, you're going to ask me questions. Can you do this on the board for us? Can you give us an example? And I absolutely, that's exactly what I'll do. You can ask me, is this going to be on the exam? And I'll tell you whether or not it is going to be on the exam. All of that is on Wednesday, but for now, that's all I have for you. I thank you.